Call the Senate Finance Committee to order. Today is February the 23rd. Please silence your cell phones. Joining me today are Senator Stedman, Senator Olson, Senator Keel, Senator Kaufman, Senator Cronk, myself, Senator Hoffman, Senator Merrick will be on our way shortly. Today we have the following. The first is the Legislative Finance Division will respond to previous committee questions, review the governor's amendments, and present an update on the fiscal summary. Then we have two pieces of legislation previously heard, HB 62, sexual assault examination kits, tracking, and Senate Bill 211, the extension of occupational licensing boards. First item, we invite Lexi Painter, the Director of Legislative Finance Division, to the table. Welcome, Mr. Painter. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Lexi Painter. I'm the Legislative Fiscal Analyst. So the first slide here is an update on the fiscal summary to reflect the governor's amended budget, including the amendments received last week. And the next slide has some of the notes on what I'm going to say verbally, so don't worry if you don't get it all. But in FY26, there's a couple of updates. So there's the new supplementals from February 17th. They net to an increase of $41.7 million over the governor's previous supplementals. So the largest of that was an additional amount for fire suppression, another $41.7 million, or another $42 million for that. There was a slight decrease to the Medicaid projection. It actually is a bigger decrease than it looks like. It looks like about a $2 million increase or decrease, but it's actually more like a $12 million decrease. The other change in there is that there had been $10 million that has been identified for behavioral health, additional funding for behavioral health rates. In the first projection, that was included in the total with the $36 million hole at the time. In the new projection, that's separated out. The governor is proposing to extend that funding for another year because those weren't able to be implemented. So because the projection's down $12 million, it kind of shows up now as a reduction of $2 million net, if that makes sense. But really, the projection is down a little more than it looks like. The other item on the bottom here is the two disasters for fire suppression. The governor has said that they will come in with an amendment for that eventually, but we've been counting in the fiscal summary since December anyway, so we're still leaving it here. So the post-transfer deficit in FY26 is $336.8 million. That does not include recapitalizing the higher education fund from the CBR. That, as the governor has that as a separate transfer from the CBR, so it doesn't show up as a deficit draw. It's just a fund transfer that moves money from one fund to another. If you add that to the total CBR draw, then the total number is $466.4 million that would come out of the CBR. Sorry, I just had to refresh my memory on the next slide. So on the other body's floor right now is a version of the supplemental bill that's very similar to that. It's $35 million higher because of existing additional disaster relief funding. So that bill that's on the other body's floor right now is about a $500 million draw from the CBR. Going over to FY20. Going over to FY27. So when I presented to this committee a month ago, I think I presented that, on average, the governor's amended budget is about $103 million higher than the governor's original budget. The governor was very close to that this year. His amendments brought in, I think, about $102 million, so it was very close to the average. And there's still some outstanding things that may have to get resolved, but a lot of the items we identified as outstanding have been brought in, like the new Medicaid projection and funding for the SNAP match for the administrative costs. So I realize I've neglected to change these comparisons here, so I'll get a corrected version of that slide. but with the amendments, the deficit was about $1.5 billion, and now it's up to about $1.6 billion, a little bit higher than that, with the higher amount. The PFD number here, I would note, is the still the governor's initial estimate. If you look at the APFC's current projections, they project that to be a little bit higher. So if you did update that estimate to the newer number, the deficit would rise a little bit and would round up to $1.7 billion. And that's all I have on the slide, so I'll answer any questions.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just kind of curious, if we go and look at 26, we're showing a post-transfer surplus deficit of $51 million. So what oil price is this calculated on? And then, Mr. Chairman, I'm kind of curious if oil maintains its current price at $70 between now and the end of June, where that would put us.
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Sedman, I'm going to go ahead and skip to my last slide then that discusses oil prices, and it might be easier to have this visual in front of us. So this graph shows the actual oil prices since the beginning of calendar year 2025. That's the blue line. The red is the DOR fall forecast starting in December when that forecast came out. And you can see that the actual number, the actual amount, has climbed quite above the forecast since then. So the futures market right now is anticipating kind of a slow ramp down back towards where they had been, but, you know, keeping higher for a little bit longer. When I ran this on Friday, if we assumed the futures market prices for the rest of the year, we'd be looking at something close to the original fall forecast price of $68 a barrel, but lower revenue than the original spring forecast from back last March. We'd be looking pretty close to that price, but a bit lower revenue due to lower corporate income tax revenue and higher oil company expenses. So we would be looking at, instead of a $51 million deficit, something like a $30 million surplus based on prices as of Friday. I haven't looked at the market this morning yet. So if we stayed in that range, you know, you could see in FY26 we would get additional revenue and we wouldn't have an existing deficit to fill. Obviously, that price level would not be anywhere near enough to actually pay for the supplementals, but it would at least solve the existing deficit based on last year's appropriations.
Senator Stedman?
Well, I think that's good information, Mr. Chairman. It'd be nice to maybe have a little sensitivity table put together. If oil averages $70 from here to the end of June, or $75, or $68, $73, you know, in those ranges, so we can kind of get a sensitivity on that, because it is going to make a little bit of difference on the draw on the supplemental. Even though 500 is a big number, a little less, the better.
Yes, we can definitely provide that.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Okay, so going back to the fiscal summary, one other thing I'll note on this slide, and it's written on the next one, but I'll just note it here so you can see the impact. When we did our original fiscal summary, we had one revenue adjustment. It was for the NPRA revenue that the governor was counting as partially unrestricted general funds. Based on legislative legal's advice, we've been counting as federal funds. There's one other revenue adjustment we've added since then, which is that the governor's budget is utilizing quite a bit of general fund program receipt in the budget that previously had been lapsing to the general fund. The Department of Revenue had undergone a very extensive project to try to true up their projections for program receipts to fully capture all of the lapsing program receipts. And in their December forecast, that actually increased their revenue projection by about $30 million over where it had been after they trued all these things up. But one side effect of that is, if we're correctly accounting for any lapsing program receipts, if we then go and spend program receipts that were otherwise due to lapse, then that has the same impact to spending unrestricted general funds, because it reduces our UGF revenue. And so to try to make those things very clear, we've started including this revenue adjustment for, we're not doing it for every single salary adjustment, just for the larger items, and only where there's lapse. So there's some places where program receipts carry forward and there'd be no impact on the deficit. There's a couple of items in particular that I'd point out. The total revenue adjustment is about $10.5 million right now. The two biggest ones are, there's a capital project for the Mining, Land, and Water Division in DNR of $4.5 million. It utilizes program receipts. Mining, Land, and Water historically has lapsed program receipts beyond what's in their budget, so spending those instead of lapsing them would reduce the would re- reduce UGF revenue and therefore be the same from a deficit standpoint as spending UGF. A similar one is in Department of Commerce and Community Economic Development. There's a proposal to spend $4.2 million from business licensing receipts to subsidize licensing investigation costs for the boards and commissions. And those business licensing receipts currently lapse to the general fund, so spending those is the same from a fiscal summary standpoint as spending UGF. There's another couple of government items that utilize program receipts as well to get to that $10.5 million. We just think it's important to be capturing that because sometimes we can try to hide spending by using program receipts, but if the spending item isn't increasing program receipt revenue, and these are otherwise lapsing, it really is the same as spending unrestricted general funds from the standpoint of the deficit. There may be reasons to do it to keep a tie between the program activity and the revenue generation, but we would emphasize that it is, you know, equivalent to spending general funds from a deficit standpoint. So I already talked about these items, so I'll just move on from them if there's no questions on other fiscal summary items. There's still some future items that are outstanding. One is there's five bargaining units that are negotiating cost of living amounts for FY27. We have heard of agreements on two, but they have not yet been brought back to us in the form of amendments. So we're expecting those in subsequent rounds of amendments from the governor. It's hard to really get an idea of what the amounts on those would be. We've been using a kind of informal placeholder for it, but it's very difficult to know without having an idea of the outcome of those negotiations, what number that could be. The two largest units that are being negotiated from a UGF standpoint would be the correctional officers and then also the public safety employees. So those two, you know, typically have gotten significantly higher than cost than inflationary increases. So it's really hard for us to kind of guess without knowing the outcome of those negotiations, what that cost could be. Another item that's still outstanding is we were assessed another SNAP penalty last summer for our FY24 performance by the federal government. We're in the appeals process. It's unclear when that will get resolved. Last year, we had a similar item that came in the governor's February supplementals, and that item was split between new investment projects to improve our SNAP system and then in a fine to the federal government. So we could see a similar split this year, but again, that's still pending at this point. It's more likely to be a supplemental item based on historical spending. And then there's a couple items that are still pending and, you know, difficult to know exactly the outcome of. One is the federal K-12 disparity test, as we've talked about in this committee a few times. The state failed that back in last May, and we are still in the appeal process. If our appeal is unsuccessful, the districts would retain their impact aid, but the state could no longer deduct it from our formula. That has an impact of about $78 or $79 million in FY26 and about $70 million in FY27. If we are unable to deduct that, it would increase our budget, give school districts more funding, but again, at the cost of the general fund. Another item that's still pending is the grant application for the Alaska Marine Highway System federal funding. We're relying on that for the current calendar year, and that's still pending. So if we don't get that grant opening up, we could have a hole in the Marine Highway this calendar year. But, again, the timing of that is not known.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering about the corrections. Could you repeat that again on the correction negotiations?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman. So the contract that the Correctional Officers Union came to with the administration last year through the mediation process did not include a cost of living agreement for FY27. It included all other terms, and they went back to interest arbitration on just that COLA item. Director Sanders testified last week that they have an outcome from that arbitration, but it has not yet been put into amendment form, and I don't know what COLA level they came to with that arbitration process.
Please proceed.
Okay, so the next few slides are following up on questions that I deferred back on January 29th. The first was to compare the 5- and 10-year averages for the disaster relief and fire suppression funds. And One thing I'd note that these fire suppression figures are based on the numbers we get from OMB as the preliminary actual. The actual cost of fires in a given year takes several years to work out, and you see in the governor's supplemental for fires this year, costs going back as far as FY19 that are being paid out this year. So, you know, someday we'd like to work with the department now that they're caught up in those old years to try to get what are the true costs you've experienced year to year after all of the things that get shifted around into future fiscal years. They've trued up now, I think, with this new round. They've trued up through FY23, and they'll close out FY24 in not too long. So we may be able to get a better time series. But right now we're kind of using these preliminary numbers that we know are not quite complete. So for the Disaster Relief Fund, the 10-year average would be about $19.35 million, 19.4, I suppose. The 5-year average would be $23.8 million. The governor's request is $24 million, so I suppose rounding up the 5-year average. For fire suppression activity, the 10-year average is $52.3 million, 5-year average $60.6 million, and then the governor's request this year is $47.5 million. That governor's request is equivalent to the preliminary FY25 actual cost, FY24 actual cost, I believe. When he vetoed, it was to that preliminary cost. So it's kind of a one-year amount, but is below that long-term average. I would say that when we first started really talking about this in earnest a few years ago, we were at $13 million, so getting this close to the average represents tremendous progress in truing up our budget. You know, the fact that we're $5 million short of the 10-year average, that's really a lot of progress in truing up our budget, and I don't want to understate that. Just because we are below the average, we're a lot better than we were just a few years ago.
Senator Kaufman.
Thank you, Mr. Painter. Just what you mentioned, how long it takes to aggregate those costs. Do you, to end up with what an annual cost is, and it goes pretty far back. I'm just curious what drives that.
Through the Chair, Senator Kaufman, talking to the Department of Natural Resources, some of it is that they have this cross-billing that they need to do that's not only with the federal government, but it's with other states. They bring other states' fire crews to Alaska, and then our crews go to other states, and we have to bill each other for our expenses. And some states that we have an agreement with, we directly deal with. States that we don't have an agreement with because we don't work with as much, they actually have to go through the federal government to us, so there's a couple of steps, and that takes a while to go through all those steps. The other factor is sometimes, other states or the federal government, or I suppose it could happen with our state, but it's been other states, will find as they go back through their process that there was a cost that they should have attributed to a given activity that they did in past years and that they didn't correctly identify. So I think that's what happened with that FY19 one, is that, you know, a state found a few million dollars that they really should have billed us for back at the time and they didn't, and now they're coming back and billing us. So that process can take a while, but just the normal process takes at least a year to get through all of those steps of cross-billing and identifying, you know, who needs to pay what, and then that can go back and forth and you have to reconcile it. And again, there's many states involved, several federal agencies. The federal agencies right now are working on consolidating their efforts so that it's not several federal agencies you deal with, it's one. That may simplify it in the future, but of course there's always, when you're changing things, it can be difficult in the transition period. But it is a complicated process because so many agencies are involved across multiple layers of government at the state and local level, or state and federal level.
Senator Kaufman.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Kaufman. Please proceed.
Okay, the next question that I deferred was about the amount of the budget that's personal services. So, and then if those items, the personal services items, grow with inflation, would that exceed 1% budget growth, which is the amount in the governor's proposed appropriations limit that the state government would grow if you follow that appropriation limit. So in the governor's budget, about $3.5 billion of agency operations, about 30%, is personal services. Generally, about half of that is unrestricted general funds, so we could estimate about $1.8 billion, or 37% of that is UGF, if we're rounding. The salary adjustments in the governor's budget right now actually are 3.1%, a little bit above inflation because healthcare costs have been going up higher than inflation. And so If you look at that $55 million equates to 1.2% of the UGF total for agency operations. So, you know, just that is greater than 1% alone. One thing I would note also is that, you know, the governor's amendments went up by $100 million, and when he did his fiscal plan that he released a month ago, it was based on his initial budget. And so growing at 1% a year, we're actually already above the amount we're supposed to spend for FY29 based on the governor's budget in the governor's amendments. So it's important when you're building a fiscal plan to start with a realistic base. The December budget, as we know, was, you know, $100 million low or so. And so you need to add that in. But that's kind of an aside. But personal services alone, if they grew at inflation, would eat up that entire 1% annually on average.
Questions? No questions? Please proceed. Okay.
So I talked some about this slide. One other thing to add on this slide, I guess, is just to talk about FY27 a little bit. So the forecast for FY27 is $62 a barrel. We have two different forecasts here. Alternative forecast. One is the Energy Information Agency's short-term energy outlook. That has been more conservative recently than the analyst market or the futures market, looking at aggregate demand, supply and demand more. The prices have been rising primarily due to concerns about Iran conflict and the impacts of that that are not really just captured in the fundamentals that the EIA is looking at. So they're projecting a lower price down in the 50s. The futures market does view the current high prices as potentially a bit transitory. It's showing that coming down. But even still, if you took an average of Friday's future market, we'd be looking at something like $67 or $68 oil, you know, so maybe $5 or $6 higher. So that's $150, $180 million higher than the spring forecast if that holds. And prices have been quite volatile the last few weeks, so it's pretty difficult to say whether that will hold. The key date for that, the revenue forecast, is March 13th, so that's when it's due out. That would imply that the futures they'll use for the forecast are probably the first week of March or so. So if you want to know what the spring forecast will look like, watch the futures market next week. And that is all the slides I have. I'm happy to answer any other questions or turn it over.
Any other questions for the director? Thank you for that presentation. We will move on to the next item, which is HB 62, sexual assault examination kits and tracking. This bill, this is a companion bill to Senate Bill 69, which was last heard on April the 10th. We took public testimony at that time. No amendments have been offered for either bill. So I invite the Department of Public Safety, Sue Frenzel and David Karnassius to the table to reintroduce the bill for the committee. Call the Senate Finance Committee back to order. Please identify yourself and reintroduce the legislation to the committee.
Thank you. Through the chair, for the record, my name is David Canaris. I serve as the chief of the Alaska Scientific Crime Detection Lab with the Department of Public Safety. With me today is Director Susie Frenzel of the Victim Assistance and Forensic Science Division. Thank you for inviting us today. On behalf of Commissioner Cockrell and all of the Department of Public Safety, I want to express our sincere gratitude to the committee for bringing forward House Bill 62 and its identical companion legislation, Senate Bill 69. Thank you for considering advancement of this important legislation. by establishing clear timelines for sexual assault kit examination and testing, codifying the statewide tracking system, and strengthening survivor rights. You are promoting transparency and accountability throughout Alaska's criminal justice system. The support of the legislation in the passage of this bill ensures timely processing of evidence and provides survivors with the dignity and support they deserve. Thank you for your time, collaboration, and continued commitment to this critical work. If it pleases the Chair, we are prepared to read the sectional analysis for the record.
Please proceed. Go ahead.
And we've brought a sexual assault examination kit here. If anyone would like to see it, we can pass this out. So, Section 1 amends AS 1261010, the Rights of Crime Victims, subsection A, to add paragraph 16 to include the right to be notified of the location and testing date of sexual assault examination kit that is collected from the victim. Section 2 amends AS 4441065, the Sexual Assault Examination Kits, subsection A, to require that within 14 days after gathering the evidence, healthcare providers shall notify the appropriate law enforcement agency that the sexual assault examination kit is available to be sent to an accredited laboratory in coordination with the Department of Public Safety. Previously, this section was only applicable to law enforcement agencies. It requires that a law enforcement agency must send the sexual assault examination kit to an accredited laboratory in coordination with the Department of Public Safety. It requires that within 120 days of when a sexual assault examination kit is received by the laboratory to which it is sent, the sexual assault examination kit must be tested within 120 days. Clarifies that if the case is resolved before the sexual assault examination kit is tested, then the healthcare provider, law enforcement agency, or laboratory in possession of the sexual assault examination kit is not required to meet the time limits established in A of this subsection. Section 3 amends AS 4441065, sexual assault examination kits, to add subsection E, which clarifies that sexual assault examination kit information must be entered into the tracking system established by the Department of Public Safety. Section 4 amends AS 4441, Department of Public Safety, to add a new section, AS 4441067, sexual assault examination kit tracking system. This requires that the Department of Public Safety to develop and operate a sexual assault examination tracking system to track the status and location of a sexual assault examination kit from the point of evidence collection to testing. It requires that the sexual assault examination kit tracking system allow the victim to access and, if the victim chooses, to receive automated notifications of the status of the kit and when the kit has been tested. It establishes the sexual assault examination kit tracking system as confidential and not subject to public records, except that the Department of Public Safety may use the information to provide a report required by AS 4441070, Report on Untested Sexual Assault Examination Kits. Section 5 repeals AS 4441070, Report on Untested Sexual Assault Examination Kits, subsection A. Section 6 adds uncodified language to allow the Department of Public Safety to establish regulations, and Section 7 provides an immediate effective date for Section 6 of the bill.
Thank you for that explanation. Are there questions on the section analysis? Seeing none, Senator Keel, review of the fiscal note.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Bill 62 has one fiscal note from the Department of Public Safety in their laboratory services allocation. It is $209,000 of unrestricted general funds in fiscal year 27 at one permanent full-time position. That amount rises only very slightly in the services line over time. And while it doesn't create any new funds, it does need a couple of new regulations.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Are there questions on the fiscal note? Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that House Bill 6234-GS-1317-A from committee with the attached fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Is there objection? Seeing no objection, that bill passes from committee with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal note. We'll take a brief at ease while finance members sign the report. Well, the Senate Finance Committee to order. For the record, Senator Merrick has been online. That brings us to the next item on our agenda, Senate Bill 211, the Extension of Occupational Licensing Boards. This bill was first heard on February the 23rd. We took public testimony, reviewed the fiscal notes at that time. No amendments were submitted. So I invite Senator Borgman to the table to reintroduce Senate Bill 211. Senator, identify yourself for the record.
Thanks very much, Co-Chair Hoffman, Co-Chairs Olson and Stedman, and members of the esteemed Senate Finance Committee. For the record, my name is Jesse Bjorkman, and I represent the northern and central portions of the Kenai Peninsula. The bill before you, Senate Bill 211, extends the sunset dates of six professional boards. They include the Board of Professional Counselors, the Board of Marital and Family Therapy, the Board of Psychologists and Psychological Examiners, the Board of Social Work Examiners, the Real Estate Commission, and the Certified Real Estate Appraisers Board. The bill before you follows the extensions recommended for each of these boards in the state's 2025 audits. Here for questions is our legislative auditor, Chris Curtis, also the director of the Division of Corporations, Businesses and Professional Licenses, Sylvan Robb.
Are there questions of the Finance Committee? Let's see, none. Will of the committee.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 211, 34-LS1252-G from committee with the attached fiscal note and individual recommendations.
Is there objection? Seeing none, that bill passes from committee with individual recommendation, attached fiscal note. We'll take a brief at ease while Senate members sign the report. call the meeting back to order. That concludes today's agenda. Our next meeting will be tomorrow, Tuesday, February the 24th at 9 a.m. We will have three pieces of legislation on the agenda. HB 194, approved Marathon Petro Royalty Oil Sale. Senate Bill 167, regarding crime and receiving past PFDs. Senate Bill 170, gaming electronic pull tabs. With that, we stand adjourned.